Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 13th of December 2014. My name's Herewood Fenton. Welcome to the show, folks. Well, in today's two-hour show, we have quite a lot of interesting material lined up for you. In the second hour, we will be joined by Damon Crowe. Damon, frequent guest on TNRA. Damon will be joining us to talk about space exploration, the Chinese Chang'e moon mission, the Orion space program of NASA, and the Mars One mission comprised of volunteers. And we will be running all that through Damon's highly skeptical and critical mindset. Damon does not accept the official narratives of NASA, and he's done quite a lot of research on it in very, very specific areas and very detailed research. I don't expressly support the Apollo hoax narratives or claims, but neither do I fully accept what we're told about the space program. And as I've said on this show many times, I've got some doubt. I've got some confusion, and it's really just based on very straightforward, logical observations. I don't go in for all of that complicated stuff about evidence of whether the moon missions were faked or whether the photos are real. And there's so many details that and a lot of those inevitably are going to be wrong. Even if the overarching claims are right, a lot of the things people put forward as evidence are wrong, because people aren't going to be right 100% of the time about anything, right? But it's a topic I would like to bring back onto the show, because there's so much talk about space exploration again now, and NASA seems to have a very serious program once again to put human beings into space, into deep space. And the fact is, they haven't done that for a very, very long time. You know, it's been over 40 years since any human being has been outside of the orbit of Earth above a couple of hundred kilometres. I mean, you know, we really haven't been into space for a very long time, even according to the official narratives. And it's curious, isn't it? And now, after all this time, We're hearing about all this research and programs to try and understand the Van Allen radiation belts, and a lot of information's coming back from the probes that they've done to indicate that there is quite a serious problem there in terms of getting people into space. And all of that just doesn't sit very well with the accepted narrative that that this was actually perfected so many years ago that it became routine, and all the technological challenges were solved. And yet now they're talking about all the technological challenges again and saying, oh, it's going to be very difficult, and we've got to develop a special heat shield, and we've got to do all these difficult things that we don't really – we've got to test it out, you know. So I just find that quite interesting. I mean, you know, here was a program, you know, the Apollo program that conquered all of these obstacles, and then they just stopped doing it. They didn't continue the technology, they didn't keep up with the expertise, and now they've got to learn it all over again. Well, just seems a little odd, doesn't it? But maybe that's the way the world works. Maybe it's not like other forms of technological development where, for example, with air travel, you know, it was continuous development improvement. It never slipped backwards. The same with ocean voyages. You know, there was continuous progression in terms of the reach of ships and exploration of the world. But it seems that with this particular subject, we've kind of slumped back into an inability to do it for many years. And now we're trying again. But then the question remains, you know, well, in many people's minds, about the Apollo missions. I mean, many people have these questions about the Apollo missions. Many people are afraid of talking about it. But of course, the reason there being, because you will be derided, you will be treated like a complete idiot by many people. And you will be crushed. Your ego will be crushed. It is socially unacceptable to even raise any questions like this. And this is a phenomenon that we see across many topics, across many areas of our society where there is uncertainty, debate, controversy. We've seen over the last generation or so this development of a rigid mindset among people that just crushes viewpoints that really just stem from having a mind that is curious and wants to have questions answered and wants to really understand what's going on. It's just a natural thing, right? But this has now been called the conspiracy mindset. See, if you question what you're told by the authorities, you're a conspiracy theorist. But this is actually the development of a very dangerous totalitarian mindset, which has become predominant in the Western world. It has just slowly evolved, folks. It's just slowly grown almost like a cancer into our way of thinking. And people are not even aware of it. You know, people have no consciousness of it, even when they are acting it out. I mean, I've seen this so many times on chats, on forums, on Facebook. The average person who subscribes to all of the official narratives acts as an arm of the sort of regime, of the totalitarian mind control regime, to crush dissent. And that they can be quite vicious, you know. They basically just come after you as some kind of pathetic loser who probably lives in your parents' basement. They just use all of these ad hominem style ways of attacking you, and even people who are quite prominent who come forward as skeptics on subjects like climate change, like Bob Carter, is just accused of being a confused old contrarian or someone on the take, you know, morally ambiguous, you know. It really goes across many, many areas, as I said, you know. And many times the climate change skeptics have been conflated with Apollo moon landing hoaxes. And I've seen that on the floor of Congress in the United States, where I think it might have been Al Gore, you know, directly compared anyone who questions climate change to people who question the Apollo moon landings. You know, that in itself should be enough to make you maybe think about the Apollo moon landings a little bit more and maybe take the hoax questions a little more seriously, because the people who have serious scientific questions about climate change are not fruitcakes. I mean, there's so many scientists, there are so many highly trained, highly expert people who go against the official narrative of climate change. So, I mean, this is an incredibly important subject to consider. And what I like to do on this show is I like to just to draw all the threads together so we can understand from a sociological perspective of what it is we're dealing with this crushing of dissent. I mean, vaccines is another one, and I've got an article that I'm going to read to you shortly, but vaccines is another topic where the forces of conformity, the forces of the mainstream are so powerful and so dominant that people are just crushed for expressing an opinion. And it ends up coming down to your rights as an individual. It always ends up with the powers that be wanting to constrain your behavior. It doesn't just end at controlling your thoughts. With vaccines, obviously there is a continuous pressure from on high to make vaccines mandatory, and so to end your right to choose, especially for your children. There is obviously pressure with climate change to bring in the carbon taxes laws, and of course that will have a direct impact on your behavior, which you will not be able to escape. there are many other examples we could bring up, but what we see is this is part of a trend. It is part of a trend of society becoming less tolerant, more totalitarian. And so when we get on to hour two with Damon Crowe, try to bring all that into your mind as we talk about it, and understand that this is not simply an argument that we might have over a beer in a friendly way about, you know, are those photos real or did this really happen? This is part of a problem in our society. The problem of deceptions in our society is so huge that we have to be prepared to really to rethink everything and to take a lot of steps to try and free ourselves. And then once we've freed ourselves from our own preconceptions, to help educate others. Now, I mentioned there's an article about vaccines, and I would like to just briefly talk about that. There is a tendency now in the scientific world to try and address people who have contrary views, people who are essentially dissidents, but they try to do it in such a way that they regard these people as kind of laboratory research guinea pigs. You know, we're going to study these people to find out why they're so cuckoo. You know, why they don't want to take their shots. You know, we're going to do some experiments on them. Like they never actually consider maybe just looking at the evidence again, or actually, you know, seriously considering what some of the, you know, quite prominent people like Andrew Wakefield have discovered. No. They're going to study the weird crazies who don't want to take their shots to try and find out a little bit more about them. And this is a scientific a journal article from Elsevier Vaccine Journal. And I'll just read to you here the abstract. Well, the title of the article is "Does Correcting Myths About the Flu Vaccine Work? An Experimental Evaluation of the Effects of Corrective Information." Boy, you know, that's pretty totalitarian, isn't it? Corrective information. And they've used the word myth there, unqualified, because basically their position is that anyone who has problems, questions, doubts about vaccines, that's all based on myths, that vaccines are totally safe and effective. And if you don't believe that, then you've been unfortunately subjected to a myth. And then this study is trying to see what happens when they correct people's minds. See, correct them. They fix their mind. So when we come back from the break, I'll read to you more on that. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Herewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. Back with Truth News Radio Australia. Great to have your company today. And please take a look at the website, and please consider becoming a subscriber. It's incredibly important. Really, really makes a huge difference. Every subscriber I get makes that little bit of difference. And if I can get the numbers up higher, I'll be able to do better. And I recently launched a new subscription option on the site, which is to purchase a gift subscription. So if you're thinking of something for Christmas, for perhaps a friend who maybe needs to have their eyes open to some of the hidden truths of this world, why not send them a gift subscription to Truth News Radio Australia? It's very easy to do. Very, very easy to do. And you simply go to the website, you click on subscriptions, and you go to the gift subscription option, and you put in their details, and voila, you pay for it with a credit card, and your recipient, your friend, your loved one, will receive our wonderful subscription and DVD and T-shirt by mail. And they will be forever grateful to you for having given them the gift of knowledge. Let's hope. Anyway, that's Truth News Radio Australia subscription options, so just check it out on the website. Now, getting back to the topic here of the vaccine research, the vaccine dissidents research project here that there's a report in a journal about. And what they basically did was they found some people who were skeptical of vaccines, and they particularly were looking for people who believe that the vaccine could actually give you the flu. Now, a lot of people, this is actually the flu vaccine, right? So apparently, and it says here that 43% of the public believe that the flu vaccine can actually give you the flu. And you know, many people just know anecdotally from having seen, you know, their friend at work or whatever, you know, get the shot, and then a few days later they can't come to work and they're sick, you know. And it's just like, it's observational. People have seen it. So many people who have to get the flu shot don't feel too well. Now, of course, the flu is just a word that is given to people who don't feel too well, right? You know, the flu is not a very rigorous definition, is it? You know, anytime you're just feeling sick and got a headache and you don't want to get up, you say you've got the flu, right? Now, it may not be that you actually have the flu. You might not actually have that specific flu virus or any flu virus. You might just be feeling sick. You might be having an immune reaction. An immune reaction can be very similar to flu-like symptoms. I mean, I had that once. I brought some flowers home that had a very strong perfume that I'd actually found. I brought them home, and I was loving the flowers. They were absolutely beautiful. And then I started sneezing, and I started feeling sick that night, that same night when I brought the flowers home. And then the next day I was just feeling absolutely terrible, couldn't get out of bed, and didn't know what to do. I mean, I was just suddenly, suddenly came down with the flu. I had these flowers sitting in my room near my bed. And they were, it's a very powerful, pungent perfume. And a friend of mine came to visit and actually suggested that I might just be, you know, because I was sneezing all the time. And my friend said, "What about these flowers?" And I said, I didn't know. I just thought they were flowers. But the particular flower, I just forget the name, but they are actually well known for this particular problem. Anyway, I took them out, and within about half an hour, all the symptoms stopped. And I went from having the flu to being completely normal. Now, I raise that as an example of how immune reactions can be similar to disease. I mean, immune reactions are actually a disease response. And as Vera Scheibner was saying on our show several weeks ago when she came on, a vaccine researcher from Australia, one of the effects of vaccines is anaphylaxis, overstimulation of the immune system, which is an immunological problem. It's an immune response. So when the CDC tells you that you know, don't worry, the flu vaccine cannot give you the flu, Well, maybe that's right. That's probably correct. It doesn't actually give you the flu. It's an attenuated virus. It's not a live virus. It can't give you the flu, but it can give you symptoms that are the same as the flu. I like to say that they love to play with words. They love to play games. But, you know, that's probably an incorrect way of saying it. It's that the deception becomes inevitable when there is this constant pressure from big pharma to continue to make their profits. And deception just becomes par for the course. You know, they don't have to be aware that they're doing it. It's just continuous and relentless. And anyway, this research piece about vaccines is part of trying to just reinforce the idea that people who have problems with vaccines, people who question vaccines, people who don't accept vaccines are cuckoo and just really can't even be helped. Because what they've done is they have taught people the truth. See, they've taken these skeptical people and they said, look, here, read this information. See, you're all wrong. It says here that that vaccines don't actually cause the flu. Let me just read to you the abstract. Seasonal influenza is responsible for thousands of deaths and billions of dollars of medical costs per year in the United States. But influenza vaccination coverage remains substantially below public health targets. One possible obstacle to greater immunization rates is the false belief that it is possible to contract the flu from the flu vaccine. A nationally representative survey experiment was conducted to assess the extent of this flu vaccine misperception. We find that a substantial proportion of the public, 43%, believes that the flu vaccine can give you the flu. We also evaluate how an intervention designed to address this concern affects belief in the myth, concerns about flu, vaccine safety, and future intent to vaccinate. Corrective information adapted from the CDC prevention website significantly reduced belief in the myth that the flu vaccine can give you the flu, as well as concerns about its safety. However, the correction also significantly reduced intent to vaccinate among respondents with high levels of concern about vaccine side effects, a response that was not observed among those with low levels of concern. This result, which is consistent with previous research on misperceptions about the MMR vaccine, suggests that correcting myths about vaccines may not be an effective approach to promoting immunization. So there we have it, folks. The anti-vaxxers are just so cuckoo that even like when you tell them the facts, they become more cuckoo. They're like rabid dogs. You can't talk to a rabid dog. Basically, that's the conclusion. You know, these people are impervious to facts, and in fact, giving them facts makes them worse. And this will actually encourage them now to think, well, we must use social engineering techniques, mustn't we? We can't give them information. They just reject it and become even more hardline in their stance, right? So you can't talk to them. They're not open to reason. They're not open to facts. So this will then lead to conclusions that we must manipulate them in other ways. We must control them in other ways. We must hypnotize them. We must mentally coerce them, or perhaps threaten them. That's the other great technique that's always the fallback technique, fear. And I'm sure that there'll be other articles that come out that say perhaps the best way to bring immunization back up to the levels that we expect is to put a little bit of fear into people's minds. Anyway, we're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back after the break with some other interesting topics. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And we're going to continue now with some other stories. I've got a very important story to read to you today, which perhaps reflects a changing of the tide in international relations with Russia. I've got an article here from Salon.com titled, New York Times Propagandist Exposed, Finally the Truth About Ukraine and Putin Emerges. NATO was the aggressor and got Ukraine wrong. Many months later, the media has eventually figured out the truth. Now, this is quite interesting, coming from Salon.com, which is a typically left, progressive, you know, lockstep view with the mainstream liberal politics of America. But they are coming out strongly against the anti-Russian narrative, which has been dominant in all the news for the last few years, really, but really picked up in the last year. And, you know, they're also coming on side with Putin. And they also, in this article, raise the fact that Henry Kissinger, the infamous Henry Kissinger, one of the most fierce and malevolent globalists of them all, has now come out in support of Vladimir Putin. And what this suggests is that maybe there's a realignment coming, folks. Maybe there's a realignment. I mean, remember that the big enemy is always China. It's always been China. Maybe there's a plan here to bring Russia back in to the fold, better to deal with China. I don't know. I mean, let me just read to you from this article by Patrick L. Smith. As he says here, it has been a long and lonely winter defending the true version of events in Ukraine. But here comes the sun. We now have open acknowledgement in high places that Washington is indeed responsible for this mess, the prime mover, the aggressor. And finally, this term is applied where it belongs. NATO, once again, is revealed as causing vastly more trouble than it has ever prevented. Washington, it is now openly stated, has been wrong all along. The commentaries, to be noted, do not take on the media, but I will, and in language I use advisedly. With a few exceptions, they are proven liars, not only conveying the official version of events, but willfully elaborating on it off their own bats. We have had in the last little while significant analyses of the Ukraine crisis, each employing that method that the State Department finds deadly, historical perspective. In a lengthy interview with Der Spiegel, none other than Henry Kissinger takes Washington carefully but mercilessly to task. Does one achieve a world order through chaos or through insight? Dr. K asks. And here is an extract from the interview. Kissinger. If the West is honest with itself, it has to admit that there were mistakes on its side. The annexation of Crimea was not a move towards global conquest. It was not Hitler moving into Czechoslovakia. What was it then? One has to ask oneself this question. Putin spent tens of billions of dollars on the Winter Olympics in Sochi. The theme of the Olympics was that Russia is a progressive state tied to the West through its culture, and therefore it presumably wants to be part of it. So it doesn't make any sense that a week after the close of the Olympics, Putin would take Crimea and start a war over Ukraine. So one has to ask oneself, why did it happen? What you're saying is that the West is at least kind of responsible for the escalation. Kissinger, yes, I am saying that. Europe and America did not understand the impact of these events, starting with the negotiations about Ukraine's economic relations with the European Union and culminating in the demonstrations in Kiev. All these and their impact should have been the subject of a dialogue with Russia. This does not mean the Russian response was appropriate. Let us note that Kissinger's remarks follow an essay titled Why the Ukraine Crisis is the West's Fault. The subheading is just as pithy: The Liberal Delusions That Provoked Putin. Now, I will actually just draw your attention to that article, which is published in Foreign Affairs, which is a publication of the Council of Foreign Affairs, Council of Foreign Relations, the infamous Council on Foreign Relations, another globalist think tank. And this organization is now shifting in their perspective. I mean, this is very significant, folks. I mean, these people really do shape history. They control agendas of entire continents. So the title of this article from the Foreign Affairs publication is Why the Ukraine Crisis is the West's Fault: The Liberal Delusions That Provoked Putin. According to the prevailing wisdom in the West, the Ukraine crisis can be blamed almost entirely on Russian aggression. Russian President Vladimir Putin, the argument goes, annexed Crimea out of a long-standing desire to resuscitate the Soviet Empire, and he may eventually go after the rest of Ukraine, as well as other countries in Eastern Europe. In this view, the ouster of Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych in February 2014 merely provided a pretext for Putin's decision to order Russian forces to seize part of the Ukraine. But this account is wrong. The United States and its European allies share most of the responsibility for the crisis. The taproot of the trouble is a NATO enlargement, the central element of a larger strategy to move Ukraine out of Russia's orbit and integrate it into the West. At the same time, the EU's expansion eastward and the West's backing of the pro-democracy movement in Ukraine, beginning with the Orange Revolution in 2004, were critical elements too. Since the mid-1990s, Russian leaders have adamantly opposed NATO enlargement, and in recent years, they have made it clear that they would not stand by while their strategically important neighbour turned into a Western bastion. For Putin, the illegal overthrow of Ukraine's democratically elected and pro-Russian president, which he rightly labelled a coup, was the final straw. He responded by taking Crimea, a peninsula he feared would host a NATO naval base, and continued to work to destabilize Ukraine and until it abandons its efforts to join the West. Now, of course, this is what we all knew. This is what we all understood for so long now. And here is the CFR saying it plainly, demonstrating that they actually know exactly what's going on, but kind of turning the tables quite suddenly and dramatically, really. But remember George Orwell, remember 1984, remember how the key principle of doublethink is that you will change people's perceptions and then people will forget that they ever had the previous perception. This week, Oceania is at war with Eurasia. Next week, Oceania is allies with Eurasia and always has been. You know, Russia has always been our important ally. Always been. You know, last month, Russia is part of this. Russia is Putin is like Adolf Hitler. There is a terrible, terrible thing coming which we must fight against at all costs. You know, we must. NATO must get involved, and we must put missile batteries up to stop it. But then it can change. I'm not saying it will. This is not proof that it will. But it looks very strongly in that direction. But don't relax. It's not a reason to relax. In fact, it's a reason to be even more concerned. And what I would be even more concerned about is to see the Russians becoming comfortable in their relation with the West again. That's not what we want. We actually need the détente. That's actually what maintains the stability. I'm going to break here with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to be with you today. and we'll be back for the next segment, and then we'll be back in the following hour with a great interview on the Apollo mission.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Okay, I would like to, in the last section of today's first hour, to play to you a clip of a law professor talking about a very important subject, and this is about the police, dealing with the police, and why we should not talk to the police in the event that we are stopped, questioned, for no good reason, or even if there is reason. This, a law professor from the United States, argues that we should always plead the Fifth Amendment, which of course is your right to remain silent, your right not to incriminate yourself, which is enshrined in the US Constitution. Now, for those of us who are not in the United States, we don't have an all-encompassing protection such as the Fifth Amendment, but we do have in common law, and I want to point this out, we do have in common law the acceptance of the right to silence. I'm going to read to you here an article from Wikipedia on the right to silence provisions in Australia. Australia has no constitutional protection for the right to silence, but it is broadly recognised by state and federal crimes acts and codes and is regarded by the courts as an important common law right. In general, criminal suspects in Australia have the right to refuse to answer questions posed to them by police before trial and to refuse to give evidence at trial. However, a person must answer questions related to their name and place of residence if asked by police. As a general rule, judges cannot direct juries to draw adverse inferences from a defendant's silence, but there are exceptions to this rule. Now, some of the exceptions to that are in the area of bankruptcy, and I'm just reading here quickly through the article. It's not really very comprehensive, but I do also know that in the anti-terrorism legislation, your right to remain silent is completely removed, so that if you are called as a witness in a case that comes under the statutes of anti-terrorism legislation, if you don't speak, you are actually going to be committing a crime, which is a terrible abrogation of our rights. But anyway, that's just a little background for you if you're from Australia. I would like to now play to you this clip. We won't have time to play more than a few minutes of it, but I think you may find it very interesting, and I will put a link to it on the show notes. So this is a law professor talking about the extreme importance of not talking to the police. Here we go.
I was invited to give you a taste of a typical law school classroom experience here today, and I thought I would take advantage of this opportunity to do something that's been on my mind for a while, to stand up and to proudly say, God bless America, God bless the Bill of Rights, and thank God for the Fifth Amendment. I'm not ashamed to say I'm proud of the Fifth Amendment, and I'm proud to admit on camera and on the Internet that I will never talk to any police officer under any circumstances, with all due respect, sir. I'm doing something really extraordinary here today, something you'll almost never see another law professor do as long as you live. I'm really putting myself on the spot here. This was my idea. By my invitation, I have given up half of my time, approximately. I'm giving equal time and the last word to an expert who really knows something about what I'll be talking about. So I'm opening myself up to the possibility that he will contradict me. I was a criminal defense attorney when I was in private practice. So I want to make sure, in fairness to you, if I'm misleading you or giving you a slanted or one-sided presentation, you'll be able to get the last word from somebody else. I'm sure he'll have a lot to teach all of us, including myself. The Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution provides, no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. And this unfortunate amendment has gotten a bad rap in recent times, much of it tragically and unnecessarily through, as you may have heard, the headlines. There was a recent Regent Law School graduate who was in all the news for a couple of weeks. She was an outstanding former student of mine, and she really got quite a lot of undeserved flack for the fact that she chose to exercise her right to remain silent when the Senate wanted to ask her certain questions that arguably might have tended to incriminate her. All of the world was aghast. The Christian community in particular looked at this and said, how could a Christian do such a thing? How could a Christian take the Fifth Amendment? And I said, you go, girlfriend. I do the same thing. I'll do it every time. And I want to talk to you about why that's true, but first, a quick listening test. Let me read to you something that was taken out of the newspaper this morning, and I want you to listen to it closely. And I'm giving you a heads up. I'm warning you in advance, which is not fair to you. Not fair to me, but I'm giving you a warning that I'll be quizzing you on this in just a few minutes. This will test your aptitude for legal study and legal practice. Listen closely. It won't take long. Last night, agents of the Norfolk Police Department found three victims of an apparent murder dead in an apartment in the East Ocean View area, the apparent victims of a gangland-style slaying, and possibly the victims of gang-related violence. The police are investigating this as a possible murder and suicide, but right now suspect that the three were all killed by the same individual. No suspects have yet been identified in the slaying, but veteran police detective George Brook has confirmed that police are following up on evidence pointing to the possible involvement of an off-duty naval officer as the perpetrator. The bodies, which were found by the apartment manager at about 8 o'clock in the morning, appear to have been slain sometime earlier in the same evening, probably sometime between midnight and 2 o'clock in the morning. That's it. Those are all the facts I'll ask you to remember, and it won't be for very long either. Let's see how well you do. I'll be quizzing you in just a few minutes. Now, here's the easiest question you'll ever get from a client in all the days of your life. Question, hey, the police are here. They want to talk to me. What should I do? Well, I could give you my answer to that question in case you haven't already guessed it, but why don't we go to a real expert? Justice Robert Jackson, a prosecutor's prosecutor. Like me, he began his private practice in Buffalo, New York, years before I did, and after that he served as general counsel for the Bureau of Internal Revenue, the U.S. Department of Treasury, the Security and Exchange Commission, Assistant U.S. Attorney General for the Tax Division, later the Solicitor General and the Attorney General of the United States, and then the Chief U.S. Prosecutor for the Nuremberg Trials. That's an impressive resume. Years later, when he was a justice on the Supreme Court, Justice Jackson stated, quote, any lawyer worth his salt, today we would say his or her, will tell the suspect, his client, in no uncertain terms to make no statement to the police under any circumstances. There's the title of my talk. I'm here to explain to you the surprising and somewhat counterintuitive and admittedly unlikely reasons why Justice Jackson was right. I'm reminded of this because I'm amazed, we're all amazed, by the frequency with which we see newspaper articles coming out all the time from people who really ought to know better, who say, well, I'll talk to the police. I mean, after all, I'm a senator. I'm O.J. Simpson. I'm an experienced, highly polished individual. I've got a lot of experience with public relations, even criminal defense attorneys. There was a local news story here in the Virginia Pilot just a couple of months ago about an experienced criminal defense lawyer who ended up getting convicted of criminal assault because he talked to the police. He was accused of having assaulted another attorney in the hallway. There were no other witnesses to this. A woman said that he grabbed her by the throat during an argument over a case. He denied it. At trial, it was his word against hers. He said, I did not even touch her. But unfortunately for him, when the police had approached him earlier and said, would you be willing to answer some questions? He said, sure, why not? I'm an attorney. I'm a criminal defense attorney. I'm savvy. I'm sophisticated. I've got oratorical prowess. I'm accustomed to dealing with the police, by all means. And then there was a conversation that was not recorded. When the case went to trial, it was no longer his word against hers, because when he testified at trial, I never touched her. The officer took her to the stand and testified, well, when I met with him, he said he did put his hand on her throat, but just as a joke. Then he had to take the stand again and say, that's not true. I never said that. I never admitted to you that I... Now it's his word against two people. Who's telling the truth? We'll never know for sure. But he was found guilty. Now, here's part of the problem. The heart of the problem, as Justice Breyer on the U.S. Supreme Court explained in 1998, is, quote, the complexity of modern federal criminal law codified in several thousand sections of the United States Code and the virtually infinite variety of factual circumstances that might trigger an investigation into a possible violation of the law make it difficult for anyone to know in advance just when a particular set of statements might later appear to a prosecutor to be relevant to some investigation. One expert on criminal law recently noted that estimates of the current size of the body of federal criminal law vary, although it has been reported that the Congressional Research Service can no longer even count the current number of federal crimes. That's right. Even the federal government has lost count. These laws are scattered over all 50 pages of the U.S. Code, encompassing roughly 27,000 pages. Worse yet, these statutes often incorporate by reference to the provisions of administrative regulations. Estimates of how many such regulations exist are even less well settled, although the ABA thinks there may be nearly 10,000. Here's one of those 10,000 federal criminal statutes on the book that you probably never heard about. It's called the Lacey Act. 16 U.S.C. Section 3370 says it's a federal offense for any person to import, export, transport, sell, receive, acquire, or purchase any fish or wildlife or plant taken, possessed, transported, or sold in the violation of any law, treaty, or regulation of the United States or any Indian tribal law or any state or any foreign law. People have been convicted in federal court for violating this statute because they brought back a bony fish from Honduras, not knowing that Honduran law, not American, but Honduran law, forbade the possession of the bony fish. People have been convicted under the List law because they were found in possession of what's called a short lobster.
I'll just leave it there. It's a really, really interesting lecture, this one, folks. I do recommend listening to the whole thing. It's quite long and it's quite detailed, and he gets into some really interesting points. And I just wanted to highlight there what I take from the point about not talking to the police is that, you see, we as human beings, as social beings, are always tempted to think that having a chat, having a conversation is a good and healthy thing, especially when the police do so. They use that, they utilize that that aspect of our psyche that wants to talk. And they do it in such a way to make you feel comfortable. They say, look, we just want to have a general chat with you. We just want to ask you some questions. And it seems like the most harmless thing in the world. Now, of course, you may chat with them and you may not say anything incriminating at all. You may speak perfectly correctly. But the mere fact that you have actually sat down and had a chat with them, then, you know, worst case scenario, can provide an opportunity for totally corrupt police to inject things that you didn't say into the record of that conversation. You know, they can just say, well, he told me such and such, when you didn't, right? So the mere fact that you talk to them gives them an opportunity to verbal you. Whereas if you don't actually talk to them at all, it's very hard for them to then use the argument that that you said something, when in fact you never talked to them at all. Whereas if you did talk to them for even a few minutes, they can say, well, while he was talking to us, he admitted to, you know, putting his hand on my throat, such and such, right? Anyway, we're going to break. When we come back from the break, Damon Crow, Apollo, Mars, the moon, we're getting into some really heavy, heavy stuff, folks. So it's going to be a good hour, and I do hope you can join us. Truth News Radio Australia, we're heading to break and a news break at the hour for our radio listeners. We'll see you on the other side.